Live from Los Angeles, it's the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, managing producer of Rumble Riot Pictures, Sean Lydiard.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And musical guest, Peter Smith. I am Mark Lejeune, and now your host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
I can't think of a better conversation to be having today after a full weekend of the recalibration. Many of you know that I created a workshop, and thanks to the encouragement and assistance of both Dorothy Donahue and Mark Lejeune, we developed it into a workshop that we've been doing for all kinds of people. And happily, the last several we've done together. This weekend, neither of them were available. Dorothy was doing her energetic alchemy class at workshop, and Mark was off doing some wonderful things, which we could talk about at some point. Actually, I'm sure we will. And I was doing the recalibration by myself, and I sat there, or stood there, actually, all weekend with a group of men. This was one just for men. And I would say the age group was between 50 and maybe mid-70s, or at least mid-70s. I have to say, I was moved to tears on several occasions. And to watch these men that have had experiences through life and have been married and had children and had grandchildren, and in the group were people that were born with absolutely nothing, one and maybe even two people that were born extremely wealthy. And having them all come to understand that all of them had similar problems, and all of them, or most of them, actually thought in a way that they were the only ones. And then to have people get up and share afterwards and say, you know, I thought this was going to be just like one of those self-help things, and then start to cry before finishing the sentence. And what I've come to understand is what Socrates is quoted as saying, that the unexamined life is not a life worth living. And as these men examined their life and where they are today, some of them have come to realize that they've had the path they've actually always wanted, and they're happy where they are. They just never knew it. So they went around upset because of this or that, or sad because of this or that, but didn't realize that all of that was to work in their benefit for them to become who they are. And other men who have put themselves down all their lives, who are now at this age able to look back, thanks to the work that they did with the recalibration, to look back and say, oh, wow, I did do that. Oh, wow, I survived that. And then go through life in a much stronger way from then on. This is what they said they were going to do. This is what touched me. And this is why I'm excited about today's show, because our guest has done so much, and now he's in an interesting position to be able to share stories of people that are living or trying to live or trying to survive. And some of them come out with some messages that need to be heard and are being told in a most unique way. So I'm looking forward to both our guest and our musical guest on the Life Changes Show tonight, right after this.
You are listening to the Life Changes Show, recorded live from Studio NoHo. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as Marianne Williamson, Gary Anthony Williams, Sierra Campbell, and Alan Roderick Jones, on our archive page at lifechangesshow.com. You can visit us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We're back. I'm Filippo, sitting here with Mark Lejeune. Mark, you know this work.
I know this work. I know that story. I know those tears. And I know a little bit of the story, life story and transition that we're going to hear tonight and some of the passions that that we share. I'm really, really excited for our guest tonight. And it's an important, important show.
The part you know really well is what, Mark?
Well, the being one thing, the having one career, and going through a bit of a transition to an alternate career with more purpose.
Just a bit, and actually, that's one of the things that I'm looking forward to because our guest Sean has an interesting way of how he's come to all of this. So our guest has done so much from the early age of 13 or so, but we have titled this Life Moves in Mysterious Ways, which actually is one of the subtitles of one of the films he produced or executive produced. After the recession, a man trades his Wall Street career for the Hollywood Walk of Fame. He's a former Wall Street securities trader turned Hollywood film producer and managing producer of Rumble Riot Pictures. Welcome, Sean Lydiard, to the show.
Thank you.
Did I say your name right?
Yeah, you did.
Oh, okay.
Perfect. Much better than I'll pronounce your name, so I'm not going to try.
That's okay. I'm used to it, and I'm sure you're used to hearing your name in many different ways. And actually, this is one of the things that I think is so interesting about you that, can I say this? You've kind of rolled with the punches, and probably literally.
Sure.
Because you were a bouncer.
Yeah.
But you started out a poor white child.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, we grew up in a very rural area of Western Massachusetts, you know, where lower income, you know, grew up in our grandparents' home with my parents there. They're both there. It's a loving family. But, you know, we didn't have a lot of money. We didn't go on vacations. And if you wanted something, you had to go work for it. Mm. So it wasn't, you know, my parents didn't have extra money to give us. So we figured out ways to make money. I think at six, I was picking tobacco, really at a young age.
Oh, even younger.
Yeah, in Massachusetts and in Connecticut, they have broadleaf tobacco, and you have to be short. They have nets over it. So back then, you couldn't...
to protect it from birds
from
or something?
From the sun, right? So it's broadleaf, so they grow it under a net.
Okay.
Well, an adult can't walk under the net, so they'd hire kids back then, and you get paid by the bushel.
Wow.
And then pick apples and pick hydrangea, you know, different flowers and stuff, but yeah. Yeah, but you're growing up in a rural area, so you're, you know, I think I had...
There isn't a lot to do anyway, kind of thing.
Well, there is, but you're working, you know, we heated our house with wood, so you knew how to work, and I was a big kid.
Wow.
And so... No, I had a car accident. I was driving at six on the farm. You drive, and I ran into a tree in my dad's truck. It would have been seven, I guess. It was a 76 pickup truck. I was born in 69.
Did you have a license at seven?
No, from Sears and Roebuck, you could write in and get them back then.
Okay, so what, you had an accident, what happened?
No, nothing. It was just we're haying in the back field, and I hit the gas pedal and ran into a tree in my dad's brand new pickup truck. He didn't let me drive that again for a while. So.
Until you were at least eight or nine.
Yeah, well, you're driving track. I mean, you're driving.
Wow.
It was just, you know, because your dad would be, if you're cutting firewood, you're driving the tractor or pulling the tractor while he's loaning or something. So it's not.
Wow.
It's a different world.
Yeah, because you're saying this like, you know, and I don't. It's.
If you go back, it's a different type of people in the rural, I think, rural East Coast, or if you go to Alaska, that's normal. It's normal to have people working on farms that are kids.
Well, I had the country mouse experience every summer. I'd go down to my family's in North Carolina, and my uncle put me in a F-150 when I was eight, and I got it stuck on his mill and never drove it again.
You can put the blocks on the pedals so you can reach the pedals.
The two of you have so much in common. And as a matter of fact, you almost, if you both wore sunglasses like the picture on the website, I think you'd look similar. So what's fascinating to me is that you had this like, okay, now I want this, or now I can do this, or it's just a way of survival. And in your case, you did it all as honestly as possible. Like, you started your own business at 13.
Well, the flower business, it's strange how it came about. My next door neighbor, my closest friend growing up, his family's business, his aunts and uncles and stuff, owned a flower shop, Webster's Flowers in Westfield, Mass. And they would send us out to pick mountain laurel or different kinds of flowers. And eventually that led, you know, we're selling to them by the pound and not making much money. Mountain laurel we'd sell for, I think it was 25 cents a pound. And so you had to pick 400 pounds. You're in the woods.
Wow.
You know, you put in 50-pound bales or 100-pound bales and walk it a mile out. I mean, it was real work. Wow. You make $100 a day. But eventually they had us picking something called hydrangea, and they were selling it for 25 a bunch and paying us a buck. And I realized I could pick a lot of flowers and go buy a van, so I did. And, you know, took a whole load down to New York City. I knew to drive from living on a farm or driving around the farm anyway, so I could drive. I didn't have a driver's license or registered vehicle, but I took it down to New York. I'd gone to, I had to go, this is pre-internet
too. Into the
city. Yeah, into the city.
The biggest city.
And this is pre-internet, so I went to the library. Like, I saw their catalog, Webster's Flowers. They're selling the hydrangea for $25 a bunch. And
you're thinking, my friend Kevin,
I'm like, I want it for 20, I'm getting a dollar, you know? So you go pick a 1,000 bunches in a day or so. So, you know, we're making good money, but they're selling it for 25. They're making 25 grand. I'm making 1,000. This is bullshit. And so, you know, I saved a little bit of money, bought a $800 van or a $1,000 van, whatever it is, loaded it with flowers and drove it to New York City. We'd found where to go in the phone books at your public library.
Wow.
And so me and my friend Kevin, we went down there and we kind of just knocked on the different, in New York City, the flower market's on the street. I think it's 26 in America. It's all these different vendors, and we just kind of went to each one and they're like, what the heck is this? And we gave it to them. And then when we got home, the phone was ringing off the hook and we started selling 500 bunches a week to this vendor and 500 of that. And
wow.
Then went to Boston, we're selling to Philadelphia. And his father, I mean, Kevin's father still picks hydrangea. He's like 80 years old. And, you know, so it was good. My friend Brian still does it. A lot of my friends still kind of out hustling, trying to make money on it.
So speaking of hustling, so that sounds to me like you were preparing yourself for Wall Street.
Well, not really. It was
not
just
that
a way.
You knew.
It was just a way to make money.
No, I
never
I
like. I didn't like it. We got the flowers from people's homes. They grow, and people were happy to see us. They take our phone number down and they call you and say, "Hey, the hydrangea is ready. Come get it." And we pay them $100 or whatever it is, and take a couple grand worth of flowers off the trees. And they were happy. When hydrangea dies, and it looks ugly, so we were trimming the trees and shaping them. So the people were fairly happy, and you know, we made decent money. And then it allowed me to travel and do other stuff after I made a pile of cash.
And then you also started, did you start a bouncer business or
no,
you
no,
were
no.
a bouncer? You just
no,
were a
that
bouncer.
I started.
Oh, the pizza delivery.
Yeah, I owned a food delivery
or
business.
Food delivery.
What happened was I had the flower business, went to Aspen for a year, came back. You know, the flower business was seasonal. You make a whole bunch of money in August, September, October, and then lilac season or different things. So I stopped picking mountain laurel because you couldn't make any money. And so I'd do odd jobs in between or travel. And so one of the odd jobs was driving for Pizza Hut. And I lasted like two or three weeks and realized, okay, we're delivering all this pizza. And there's better pizza places in my personal opinion. So I contacted some of those places and started a delivery service to sell to do their pizza, and we grew into a pretty good business.
See, it's that mind. I still want to get to the bouncer thing, but evidently we're going to do that when we come back. But it's that mind of, and now I'm going to do this, and now I'm going to do this. And I don't know that if you know this, but very few people have that mindset. So So when we come back, we're gonna get to the bouncer thing, and then and then we're gonna get to the movies. We're gonna go all the way to Hollywood. So more with our guest Sean Lydiard when we come back, and a little later on, live music here in the studio with our guest Peter Smith. I can't wait. All on the Life Changes Show after this.
Hey guys, this is Michaela. So I'm here to tell you about the DNA Institute. If you haven't heard of it already, I wanted to let you in on it because it completely changed my life. A few years ago, I was 30 pounds overweight. I wanted a career, good friends, a loving family, and financial success, and I didn't have any of it, so I ate. Within 6 months, the DNA Institute treatment not only helped me lose the 30 pounds, it also rebalanced my hormones, healed my metabolic and digestive system, and made my higher functioning brain so loud it became impossible to overeat when I was full. Don't we all want that? So many of my friends and family turned to the Institute after they saw my success. All of them lost their desired weight, ranging from 8 to 60 pounds. I found this to be so different than anything I'd ever tried before, and it was easier than anything I'd ever done. It's not a supplement or a diet pill. It's a genuine, doctor-prescribed, custom medical treatment made just for you. It doesn't matter what your situation is or how much weight you have to lose, I believe the Institute will get you to your goal. My experience is that this is more than just a weight loss system. It's a biohack to a better way of looking, feeling, and living. When I started, I had never heard of the DNA Institute, but the fact that they've been in Beverly Hills since 1982 gave me a real peace of mind. Now that you've heard of them, click on the DNA ad at lifechangesshow.com and get your customized formula started today. Change your life like I changed mine.
You are listening to The Life Changes Show, live from Studio NoHo on the BBS Radio Network. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as The Green Children, Dan Millman, Hot Rod Fuller, and Mike Marino, on our archive page at lifechangesnetwork.com. You can also follow us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We're back. I'm Filippo, sitting here with Mark and, of course, our guest, Sean Lydiard. And a couple weeks ago or something, I was watching some interviews on Sylvester Stallone, and he was saying how for this new movie, was it called Creed? That they actually knocked out the guy, a professional boxer, knocked out the actor
Michael B. Jordan.
Yes, and you know, the guy was flat on his back, and that it had happened to Sylvester Stallone. So you have to know what it feels like, he says. So when I was watching the trailers of all your films, I thought, here's a guy who knows what it feels like. And I didn't know where, and I didn't know how. So getting to talk to you, I'm like, this sounds to me like you have dealt with some really interesting throws in your life and some interesting punches. And then literally some interesting punches. So tell us about the bouncing, just real quick.
The bouncing was when I went back to college. I had the food delivery business. I sold that. The flower business was... it's kind of diminishing returns. I had a partner. He took it over and kind of sold that or just stopped doing it for all intents and purposes and went back to school. My first wife was from a family that was in finance, and she convinced me to go back to school. So I went back to college to get a finance degree at the University of Colorado, and I was playing rugby at the time. And so I was in fairly good shape. I was very fit. I'm a big guy. I'm 6'8". I was probably 270 pounds in much better shape now. And so I got hired at a bar where I think all the bartenders were 5'5 and 110 pounds soaking wet. And they had a real problem because it was there were probably 8 to 10 fights in there a night. And so they hired me to kind of stop the fights while I was going back to college. And
you were like, knock it off or you're going to see flowers.
Yeah, no, you know, it wasn't like half the time you're sitting there and you're – you know, doors, and they paid me decent. I mean, really good for a door fee. Like, it was great. They paid me $300 a night to sit at the door. I mean, there were lots and lots of fights.
Well, they paid you to keep the fights from
happening. Yeah, but I mean, by the time, when I first started, and by the time I left, I don't think there are any more fights. I mean, we
nice.
Yeah, but it wasn't.
Started
I never
like
wanted
seven
to fight
eight
anybody.
Fights a night.
It was bad. I mean, I was at the job interview, and got into a fight and threw the guy out. And like as we're interviewing, like as he's saying, "Hey, we have a lot of problems in here." You know, the bartender had a broken arm. As I'm sitting there, Chuck the bartender had a broken arm. I think he now owns the place. It's called Round Midnight. In Boulder, and he had a broken arm and was in a sling. And I'm talking with the guy, and this guy starts mouthing off and running. A fight breaks out. I grab the guy and throw him out the door, and they're like, "Okay, you're hired."
You're hired.
And then they, it was fine. And the people there were great. The guys that worked there were great. And I never really wanted to fight anybody.
Yeah.
You know, I'd be reading a book, and some kid would come in drunk and.
And you're like, don't make me do this. All right, I have to.
Or and then once in a while there were really bad, you know, that some guy would punch a girl or somebody pull a gun or something stupid. And so it was a rough and tumble. I still have a broken tooth from it.
You do?
One of the fights, yeah.
Oh, wow.
So there were quite a few times.
I've never, you know, it'd be interesting to have we have a bouncer in here. I mean, it's an interesting conversation about what people fight about, but that's not what the show's
about.
They're
just drunk and stupid.
They're just drunk.
You know what I think it is? When college kids drink, they go out, their hormones are raging. If they're not going to get laid, they get into a fight.
Mm.
And we were the bar that everybody, it was called Around Midnight. They'd come in at, there was live music, and they'd come in close to midnight, so they're already halfway there, drunk.
Mm.
And it doesn't take much, and they're college kids filled with testosterone, and knows that.
So that's what I was
saying.
They
weren't real tough guys. It wasn't like I was dealing with gangsters, you know. Part of the CU football team at the time was, but they were most of the time they were pretty decent.
He took on the football team. Is that what I'm hearing?
No.
No, that's okay.
There was a CU recruited from. They're some tough guys.
Yeah.
But usually football players behaved. It was usually some dumb kid, and you're like, really, you don't want to do this.
Right. Really, you don't want to do this. That's what I was seeing in some of these films that I didn't think that's where it was going to end up with. Like, say, for example, I know we don't want to give too much away, but Cutthroat City.
Sure.
I'm watching the trailer at first, and I'm thinking, you know, that's out right now, or it's coming out?
It's going to come out first or second quarter. It'll be in a minimum of 400 theaters. First or second quarter of next year.
Of next year?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and we're still in post. And
okay.
We're going to do we have to do one pickup day with a pretty substantial movie star, and we're going to announce in the next few days.
Oh, nice. So interesting. You have substantial movie stars in all your movies, but it's interesting that, so I'm watching the trailer and I'm thinking, okay, so here it looks like there's, you know, gangs and da-da-da and guns and all that stuff, and then I'm thought, there's a humanity here that they're showing, and I don't think the trailer's showing it to me, but I know it's in this film. And then you went and told me that's exactly the case.
Well, you're much more perceptive than some of the comments we've seen on that,
like
for the trailer. But no, the trailer was cut a certain way to look to attract a certain audience. So it looks like a very much a Game Banner film.
Probably the audience that really needs to get the message kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's the first one, and it's way off. And we cut the trailer fairly quickly because we're fortunate because of the director, RZA, and who he is. We got asked to release the trailer at Comic-Con in Hall H, which for a small independent movie, we were sandwiched between, I think, Deadpool 2 and Wonder Woman 2, their panels.
Nice.
So it's you know... all Marvel and whoever else has to offer, and then us on an hour-long panel, and then, you know, the Deadpool machine comes in or whatever, or vice versa. I can't remember the order. But we premiered that trailer in front of 7,000 people. For a small independent film, it's quite an accomplishment. And it's really a testament to RZA and the Wu-Tang Clan and his power.
Nice.
Because he's a big... big deal, I guess.
It's interesting that you say you mentioned those particular films, and then you mentioned Marvel. And I was thinking, in watching some of these films, as people are trying to live their life, you know. And some of them are poor. Some of them are like the one about Katrina.
Yeah, well, that's right. Cutthroat City.
Oh, that's Cutthroat City. Okay,
yeah, yeah.
So and then the one about stealing cars.
Yeah.
similar kind of thing where the kid had a message.
Yeah, and stealing cars is, the reason I got in, I really love the script of Stealing Cars was the message was about, and it's based on a true story. It's these kids that get arrested for doing something stupid, and they go into a prison system that doesn't help them and teaches them to be criminals. And in some cases, I mean, we have a lot of for-profit prisons. So it was an attempt to be an indoctrination of the for-profit prison system. Because we're sending kids to prison maybe 1,000 miles away from where their family is at a very young age and to an industry that gets paid to keep them there. And they're not helping these kids. So Stealing Cars was really, it's set to show that journey of a kid who's not really a bad kid. He makes a mistake. He does something stupid. He ends up in the system. And once he's in the system, it gets worse.
There's this one line where he says something about he's here to help the kids that are in there or something like that. And I, do you know which one line I'm talking about?
No.
Okay, so there's
it's been a couple of years since
I watched. A line in there like that. And I thought, you know, so comparing to the superheroes that we're taught these are superheroes, and I thought, that kid's a superhero. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if he was able to save anybody.
And I think the superheroes are the people trying to help these kids in real life. You know, it's not. It's a horror. I mean, I don't even have the words to describe how horrible it is that we have a for-profit prison system in this country. It's just, it absolutely blows my mind that there are lobbyists in Washington right now lobbying to keep some kid locked up because so their corporate earnings can be higher. It's just. It blows my mind where we are right now.
And so the message from the movie is something like I got that, and it's like, wait a minute, have I thought about this before? And so I look at some of your movies, like even Daisy Winters.
And I had a small part in that. You know, I helped raise some of the financing. Rachel Winter, who produced Dallas Buyers Club, produced that. And, you know, that was her passion project for a long time. So I was honored to be working with her on that and get that done. Mark Wahlberg's an executive producer on that because he believed in that project as well. So it's it was a good group. Mark out there who's in there helped.
Mark Skelton helped on that?
Mark Skelton made a lot of phone calls to help find financing.
Well, awesome. Yeah. You don't tell us this stuff. Okay, well, who has time? We're so busy. Okay. So... All of this stuff to me was like speaking that there's so much humanity out there, stories that need to be explored, superheroes that are unsung.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you for all of that. The way that you transition also, this is interesting, because talk about recalibrating and the recalibration. You transitioned from Wall Street. It sounded like at first, from what I read and what I heard and all that stuff, that you were part of the crash. But you just saw writing on the wall and you're like, okay, it's time for something else kind of thing.
Like, if you're involved in the financial markets in... So let's go back. I was doing Dorby's. I did finance. And then I went to the Chicago Board of Trade. I worked in the pits of the Chicago Board of Trade where they're flashing the signs like in what was that movie? Trading Places. Mm-hmm. So I worked down in those pits.
Six-8 helped you down there.
Yeah, they hire big. They want big. They want big guys down the pits so you can see each other when you're flashing the signals. Okay. And then I became a trader, and I traded for a number of years. And then after 9/11. They allowed me to work remotely, so I moved back to Aspen. I was trading from Aspen for a number of years. I got tired of that, moved to Los Angeles, took a job, and ran a trading desk in Manhattan Beach for 8 years. Hmm. And so the transition, I kind of lost my train of thought, but I was just trying to get you to how I got to the film from finance.
Right.
And what happened, I think, was... Our industry, the niche market we served, the pricing was going away. It's just a big race to zero. Unfortunately, in this country, everything's a race to zero. Who can manufacture something faster, quicker, cheaper? Mm. And it's that way in movies. They want you to shoot a movie now in 20 days. You know, who can make it cheaper and faster? And so there's a real disconnect between what you need to create art And what the artists need and the finance need, you know, the finance structure of these
And
folks.
You knew the finance part.
Knew the finance part,
and,
yeah.
And you knew that artists could be a little difficult, but you've dealt with difficult people. Oh, these are your words.
Yeah,
actually,
yeah, yeah.
Those are not your words.
No,
you
used other words. All right, you know, listen, making a movie is a highly emotional thing for some people. A lot of these films are...
Very
it's
personal,
an emotional,
yeah.
It's an emotional attachment to these. I'm not that way. I'm not that emotionally attached to these films. I see it as I love the script. I want to be involved, but it's not – I don't identify as that person or that's my whole life is wrapped up in that script.
Yeah.
So when you're dealing with a creator of anything, whether it's somebody who wrote a script or a director or, you know, a guy invents a widget, that's personal to him.
Yeah.
He created something. If you're going to knock it, it becomes very personal. So if I criticize your radio show, that's a personal attack on you. If you criticize a script I'm involved in, I don't take it personally.
Interesting.
But a lot of people do, and I understand that. And it's I think that's where a lot of the disconnects come from, a lot of the, especially on the lower levels. It goes away a little bit as you climb the ladder, but it's a highly personal for some of the people involved.
Wow. Well, and it takes a guy like you to do it, and we're glad you're doing it, and we're glad you're here. Sean Lydiard, we'll be right back with a few more minutes with him when we come back, and then in this next segment, we'll have our executive producer, Dorothy Donahue, with her Ask Dorothy, and then right after that, Peter Smith is in the house, and he'll be doing some live music for us here on the Life Changes show right after this.
The Little Dog That Could is the fantastically true story of a man and a little dog that came into his life as his mentor to help him understand the world beyond his human senses and to experience life, love, and healing beyond his human understanding. Best-selling author Filippo Voltaggio, who currently hosts the highly regarded Life Changes show, is an internationally known singer, speaker, and life coach. Filippo offers up his own story, how one little surprise package in fur and four legs transformed his life unexpectedly forever and furthered his path of self-discovery. In The Little Dog That Could, Filippo brings to life the meaning of the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Through the reading of this book, you will experience the journey of real miracles that transcend time, space, and logic while gaining practical tools that will help you navigate your way. The Little Dog That Could is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. For more information, visit thelittledogthatcould.com. That's thelittledogthatcould.com. You are listening to The Life Changes Show, recorded live from Studio NoHo. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as Mariel Hemingway, Shadow Stevens, Barbara Morrison, and Kyle Cease at our archive on our website at lifechangesshow.com. You can also follow us online via Twitter, at Life Changes Show, and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We're back. I'm Filippo, sitting here with Mark, and of course, our guest is Sean Lydiard. And so this has been fascinating. And what I'm getting is, Sean, you're a real guy, and you're doing projects that are meaningful to you, and you're helping people along the process because you got a clear head. And I think it's all part of where you came from and who you are and all that. Before we continue the conversation, there's something that we'd like to share from all of us here at the Life Changes Show. Over the past 10 years, you've heard us interview some fascinating guests like our guest tonight and introducing some great musicians like our musician that's coming up. During that time, many of you have let us know how much you have appreciated what we do, and some of you have shared with us how the show has impacted your lives. Happily, some of you have asked how you could help support the show, and we've never asked for anything. But now, we are set up to do some very exciting things and are ready to accept your support. For the past several months, maybe even a year or two, we've been developing a new Life Changes show. We call it Life Changes Live. This new format is truly a show like you've never felt before. It's a mixed reality show. Now, mixed reality combines all of the elements of our radio show, but the new show introduces new segments and will be filmed in front of a live studio audience. One of the best parts, though, is that the show will be shot in a 360 immersive virtual reality dome with visuals and soundscapes like you've never experienced before because the technology wasn't available, and will be streamed in virtual reality all over the world. Life Changes Live resurrects classic variety talk show formats as, you know, the Johnny Carson show, but with technology and a futuristic twist that has never been possible. We invite you to be part of something truly groundbreaking on many levels, and we're asking for your support in making Life Changes Live a reality by going to our website at lifechangesshow.com and clicking on our Patreon link and becoming a Patreon. Co-create this show with us, break ground with us, and be part of something new, fun, and life-changing. And as a thank you, we've created some exclusive rewards for our listeners who become our patrons. Become a patron at the Patreon link at lifechangesshow.com. So, Sean, you know all about that kind of raising money and promotion and all that stuff, and it takes a better man than I to do it, so more power to you.
I don't know. It's not fun.
It's not fun, but you know, it's funny that you said that at some points you say, wait a minute, I'm sitting here with Anthony Hopkins. I'm sitting here with, you know, with RZA.
Yeah, there's certainly, I mean, producing any of these jobs that seem glamorous, there's a lot of work involved.
Yeah.
You know, people don't realize that 90% of it's grinding, and only a small percentage is the glamorous part, or the part that anybody should be envious. I don't know. I don't know if it's the right word or why anybody would want to be envious, but it's only a very small percentage.
And
the rest of the time is work.
And work. You've gone and started a company, Rumble Riot Pictures.
Yep.
And talk about work. So you're planning on bigger things with that.
Well, we on the set of Cutthroat City, I worked for the second time with a guy by the name of Elliot Michael Smith. Who's a younger guy than I am, and he's got a lot of energy. And so we worked well on this film. We worked together on another film prior. And so we decided to form a production company, and he's much better in talking to the agents than I am. I'm a little too direct sometimes.
Okay.
And I'm a little better at talking to the financing.
If you're standing in front of them and being direct, that could be scary.
Yeah, no, but it's, you know, they're the gatekeepers. And you know, a lot of people want to badmouth the agents or something, but they have a very difficult job. Yeah. There's a lot of people, and we're coming
trying
up. We're
to
not,
get at.
It's not like I'm Martin Scorsese and I'm calling and saying, hey, yeah, I want your actor. I'm some low-level producer that's trying to climb the ladder, and they don't know who you are until they've dealt with you a few times.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of crazy people. There's no barriers to entry into the film business. Like, You worked in Wall Street. I worked in Wall Street. Nobody ever lied about working at Goldman Sachs. Nobody ever said, yeah, I work at Goldman Sachs, and you couldn't take them at their word. They might be liars because they're working at Goldman Sachs, but they didn't lie about working there.
But they're not going to lie about that. Okay.
But in the film industry, somebody will call you up and go, I got Tom Hanks attached to my movie. And I'm like, who's the director? And they'll go, so-and-so. Excuse me. I go, no, you don't. Like, you don't have them. So.
Yeah. Well, the website is rumbleriot.com, rumbleriot, just like it sounds, .com. There you'll see all of you'll see some of the films that they're working on, and you'll see all kinds of things, actually. But we're going to be seeing a lot more, and we look forward to them, and look forward to seeing a lot more of you, too. So, Sean Lydiard, thank you so much for being on the show with us.
Thank you. I had lost my voice there at the end. So.
Well, it's perfect timing, but you'll get it back. And with that, again, rumbleriot.com. And the film to look out for that's coming out next is Cutthroat City. I think you'll be surprised. Watch the trailer. We have it up on our page. And with that, we've got our executive producer, Dorothy, here for our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, my name is Joshua, and I live in West LA. I have taken your amazing energetic alchemy course, and it has helped me in many ways that I could never have imagined. You asked us to take total responsibility for all of our choices and help me remember that I am the co-creator of my life. The question for you is, why do I feel so guilty about breaking up with the beautiful woman who fell madly in love with me? We met on a dating site and had only a few dates. When I told her as gently as I could that this relationship is not what I was looking for, she became devastated and acts like her life is over now and that we aren't together. We don't have similar long-term goals, and I want that in my life partner. Please help me let go of this guilt because it doesn't feel good.
Joshua, feeling guilty because of breaking up with someone who doesn't fulfill your long-term goals is a less than elegant choice. Guilt is defined as a feeling of responsibility or remorse for some offense, crime, wrong action, etc. I believe that breaking up with someone with whom you don't share the same feelings is nothing to feel guilty about if you delivered the message in a kind way. Let's remember that just as you are responsible for everything in your life, every person on this planet is responsible for their choices. I intuit that she is looking outside of herself for love, and that is what humans have been taught to do. It would be good for her to realize that you're not responsible for her happiness. However, without help, she may or may not be able to do this. Whether she chooses to get help or not, what is important is for you to remember that just as you are responsible for your choices, she is responsible for hers, and you can choose to move on from this situation guilt-free. In truth, you have committed no offense, crime, or wrong action in this case, unless you were a real jerk to her, and if you were, then you can use this as an opportunity to do things differently in the future, and you could apologize for your actions if they were less than elegant. If you weren't a jerk, then let's choose to move on, leaving guilt behind, and look for the gift in this situation. Everything that happens to us in this journey called life is always here for our highest and best good, although it often feels devastating when something doesn't work out as we had hoped it would. Your lesson might be for you to use more caution in the future and make sure before you get into a relationship with someone you don't really know that you ask enough questions up front to know if this is something you wish to pursue. Instead of feeling guilty, you could choose to be happy with yourself for figuring out so quickly that this wasn't the right person for you. That would certainly be a more elegant choice than choosing guilt.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
And we'll be right back here on the Life Changes Show with Peter Smith.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
The Life Changes Show is a premier radio show presented by the Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people, celebrities, corporate giants, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart, integrity, and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your lives through the Life Changes Show, lifechangesnetwork.com, and through guest appearances on other inspiring shows and events. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching, a private consultation with one of us, corporate or live event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, please email us at info@lifechangesnetwork.com.
We are back, and we have Peter Smith back with us. I'll explain in a moment, but first, he is an accomplished, well, decidedly, pianist, singer, arranger, and songwriter. And you first heard him here on the Life Changes Show when he came in and was the musical director and the arranger and accompanied Ty Taylor, which was an awesome musical experience. So welcome, Peter Smith, back on the show.
Thank you, Filippo. It's so good to be here.
It's It's great to have you.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, absolutely. Well, this time you are our musical guest. When we heard you, we're like, that guy, we didn't know you. And like, listen to him. He's so great. And then to come and find out you did all that and so much more. Molly Ringwald, you're still touring with her, right?
I am. Yeah, she's wonderful and a great singer and a great person. I was making breakfast yesterday and got to hear her on Weekend Edition in the morning.
She was
talking, about everything that's going on with this confirmation and all that.
Well, sadly for all of us, were you going to go on tour with Natalie Cole? Because you had started working as her accompanist.
I did, yeah. I was the last piano player she hired. I had sort of an audition gig with her up in Sonoma. And then immediately after that, I had all these dates in my calendar. We were going to do a big holiday show with the San Francisco Philharmonic.
Oh, wow. That would have been so great.
Hall up there. Yeah. And she just, sadly got sick and all those dates got canceled and then she died.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah.
You were part of the Four?
Yeah.
On Fox, you were part of duets, working with Kelly Clarkson and Robin Thicke and John Legend. I mean, what an experience for them and for you, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. I've been very fortunate in my career to work with a lot of amazing artists. And one of the things that I've learned, and, you've probably experienced this too in film, is when people are well-known for what they do, they tend to also be really good. You know what I mean? Mm. There can be a lot of sour grapes and stuff about, because it's hard to make it
like
in the
arts. Like, why her and not me kind of thing?
Yeah, but it's the fact is most people who are successful, with obvious exceptions.
Can we name them? No.
Really are there for very good reasons. Work ethic, talent, that magic combination.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting because today we're going to get to hear you do you.
Yeah.
and because everything that I was reading about you and I've seen about you and all, it's like you're supporting everybody else.
I am. I'm kind of like a nuts and bolts guy. I like to solve problems and do that musically and I get called to do that for people. I'm trying to put this show together. Will you arrange all the music and do all this?
Could you figure me out kind of thing?
Yeah, and it's very,
It's almost like therapy.
Yeah, there's an element to that, sometimes more so than in other situations. But I really like it because it's, the idea of an artist creating, sometimes that can be really hard if you're just sitting, with a blank canvas, as it were. Mm. What should I do? Mm. But if you hand me a singer, and I know what the genre is, and then it's boom. The work happens very quickly, and it flows, and it's that specificity that comes out of necessity of just being a working person in the arts is often really creatively satisfying. So I get caught up with that. But then, as we were saying. Sometimes I get so involved with other people's projects. It's like, oh yeah, I think I should do something.
Yeah, I have an idea. I have a singer that you could really work with. He's a wonderful musician. He's amazing, actually. You're gonna love him. His name is Peter Smith.
Oh,
and I'd love for you to put a show together for him.
Oh, okay. Let's see what he's about.
Let's. And actually, you put a show together, Too Marvelous for Words. Come to think of it.
Yeah.
Well, actually, that wasn't your music either. That was
Nat King Cole. Yeah, it was one of my heroes.
Yeah. I listen to the music, and then I think you'll hear a couple other heroes in there.
Yeah,
and they're really well placed. It's all great. So, what are we going to hear first?
Well, this is speaking of heroes. There's a great jazz pianist and singer named Mose Allison, who wrote these songs that had wonderful humor in them. Your mind is on vacation, but your mouth is working overtime. I don't worry about a thing because I know nothing's going to be all right. wonderful and a great jazz pianist. So this song that I'm about to do, speaking of writing in the blank canvas and all that, I gave myself kind of an assignment of like, let's see if I can write something in that Mose Allison vein. So this is called Maybe You Could Listen To.
Will we get what this is about?
I think so.
Oh, okay.
I think so.
All right. Well, here is Peter Smith performing his own work here live on the Life Changes Show. Maybe You Can Listen To here at Studio NoHo.
Listen to listen to listen to
Peter Smith. Yeah, we definitely got that.
I'm not
going to even ask if that came from a personal experience or not. Anyway, is that on your CD by any chance?
It's on one of my albums that I released, something called Blues at Alva's, which is a live recording we did at a wonderful performance space that I just wish was a little closer to L.A. It's down in San Pedro.
So far away.
I sound like a real LA person.
Yeah, you do, actually. And for someone who travels a lot you, I wish it were closer. I understand, though. Can people get that CD at petersmith.com?
Yeah, petersmithmusic.com.
Or Peter Smith Music, yes.
iTunes or Amazon, I think it's as well. Yeah.
Okay.
All those good places. CD Baby.
You know, it's interesting that we've been talking about films and stories and messages and stories, right?
So
you do messages and stories and song.
I do, and a lot of my music ends up in TV and film too. So there's that component to what I do, and I think music is a wonderful storytelling medium. you know. And I mean, to talk about this, the next song I'm going to do.
Yeah, actually, let me just say, because it was right after I finally got to it, right after the recalibration weekend, and it was emotional and all that. And then and then you send me, you know, I looked at the stuff that you had sent me.
Right.
And I heard this next song. And I just, I got all welled up in tears. And I'm like, I don't even know if I know what he's talking about. And then you start to tell me. I'm like, no wonder. Right. So the song is We're Going Home. So tell us the story behind it.
Yeah. So August 22nd, 2017, in my...
Which wasn't long ago.
No, it wasn't long ago. In my rather cushy first world existence, I had a pretty profound experience where I had my first major car accident. Mm. And my daughters were in the back, and it was completely my fault, although I couldn't have told you. I adjusted the air conditioner button so they would get air in the back, rolled up the windows, and I looked up, and I was in the back of a car. It was instant. And I broke my collarbone. And what was hardest about that was, like, forgiving myself. You know, for putting my children in danger that way. And I was really, you know, I was really hard on myself for a while. And then, and I just sat around and I was on these painkillers for a few days. Couldn't really do much. And then I was sitting outside on the patio and I, in about 20 minutes, I wrote these lyrics. And I remember that as being a moment of just starting to feel a turning point. You know, of what has been a months long process of just, you know, accidents happen. You didn't do this on purpose, Peter. You didn't, you know, didn't try to put your kids in harm's way.
Now you've sung this as a singer. Now I'm wondering, I know you're going to do a great job, but did you ever sing it and just cry and cry?
Yeah. I mean, I remember singing it for my mom, when I was back in New York, you know, in her living room, and she wanted to hear some stuff I'd been working on. And that was hard to, you know, singing for your mom, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a certain performance thing that, well, you know, as a singer.
Yeah, it's going to kick in. But
yeah.
But wow, this is real. Yeah. This is real life.
Yeah.
And thank you for coming and doing this. And I wanted to ask you if you would, but I didn't know what it was about, so I wasn't going to. But when I came in and I heard you rehearsing, I said, yes!
You're happy.
So,
that's great.
So here's Peter Smith performing We're Going Home live on the Life Changes show here at Studio NoHo.
Everything is strong until it breaks. Every man moves on until he wakes and sees a film of his existence. Paper thin with no resistance. And through the light, a sudden stop. Never thought to think of what's in balance. Never knew the impotence of valiance when you're wholly unprepared. And the ones you love are scared. And through the light, one thought on top, we're going home. We're going home. Searching what I know as if it matters. Piecing it together, then it shatters, and my mind starts up again. Seeking what went down and when. And through the light, the sudden stop. Burning through the film emerge the faces. Cries of pain and tears and other traces outline memory in the dawn. How much worse it could have gone. And through the light, one thought on top, we're going home, 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 we're going. Now, I'll take you there right now. Go in there right now. Take my babies home. We're going home.
Peter Smith, thank you so much. Wow. Look at the gallery out there. Everybody's applauding. That's not available at Peter Smith Music. A lot of other things are, but you haven't had time to put that at petersmithmusic.com. So where is it available for those who want it right away?
Well, right away it's petersmithmusic.bandcamp.com. And what's wonderful about it, if I do say so myself, is that my daughters play violin on it and sing background vocals.
Oh, nice.
You know, we did it all basically.
The same daughters that are in the story.
Yeah.
And they're in the car. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't get that. Otherwise, you would have had me totally, I would have gone over.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, we're coming to the end of the show, but since the theme has been kind of like doing so many things and just like going, rolling with the punches, so to speak, or I have to just throw out there that he's an actor too, ladies and gentlemen, and,
yes.
And he's been on Law & Order, 24, Scandal, Weeds, CSI, and the list goes on and on.
Well, and it's wonderful the way that's played into my musical life too, because, you know, I did a bunch of things on Young Sheldon where it's like I was on set and dealing with the music as it related to the story of what was happening, and, you know, I get called for those jobs because... Uh-huh. I've been on sets, and I know what they're trying to accomplish, and you know what I mean?
You're good. Call that guy. Call Peter Smith.
Yeah,
he's the one we want.
It's fun to have those cross-disciplinary, connectivity things.
Speaking of fun, this was so much fun. Thank you for coming back.
Thank you, man.
And being here with us and sharing your music.
Yeah.
So Peter Smith at petersmithmusic.com. Always a pleasure, and look forward to more. And and again, a big thank you to our guest, Sean Lydiard. And that is our show. Big thank you to Brent Hahn here at Studio NoHo for making us all sound so great.
Thank you, Brent.
And on behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Donahue, our producer, Mark Lejeune, and our producer, Mark Skelton, I am Filippo Voltaggio, your host, reminding you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. And visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.